Let's start out with your name and your title.
My name is Joe Schmidt, and I am the co-founder of Customer HD.
Okay, and Customer HD, we're here at Customer HD in Belize City. You're a call center, but you're more than just a call center.
We're trying to be. We're definitely trying to be more of. We're trying to be an impact company.
Right. I know this because I've been here filming with your people all week. I've interviewed your agents, your leaders, your clients. But before even getting down here, I knew that you were, I don't want to say a rare breed, but in my travels around the world, there are some good BPOs, and then there are some opaque, non-transparent, sort of strange animals that I try to stay away from those. But I got to know your organization through Alan at Arena CX, and he's a great guy. That guy, I've been following his story for 3 years. Yep. I love that guy. He said you guys were good guys, but I want to get underneath, what does that mean, good guys? I mean, you have this philosophy of people helping people. That's your tagline. How did Customer HD end up in Belize, and how are you helping people helping people?
Sure.
Helping people?
Well, the biggest question is why am I in the call center industry at all? Because I actually swore 18 years ago that I would never be in the call center industry. Only because we'd had so many bad experiences with outsourced call centers. And I was like, that's definitely something I never want to do. And so my partner John and I did a bunch of startups. I'm what they call a serial entrepreneur, but that is never defined correctly because it's supposedly a badge of honor. But what it really means is that you started a bunch of businesses, you failed at almost all of them except for one. Is what it really means. So I'm a serial entrepreneur. I've had a couple of wins. But John, my partner, has always run my customer service. And he came to me and he said, I want to start a call center. But I want it to be different. I want it to be more like, because we brought everything in-house. We never outsourced. We were the opposite of outsourcers because we wanted to build culture. We wanted to love on our people. We believed that loving on your people lowers attrition, and it's a mathematical equation that you can bring being a good human into, and it helps you. Because if you're good to people, if you treat them well, and you're kind to them, and you help them understand why what they're doing matters, it actually helps your business, which there aren't a lot of businesses, not all businesses, is there a direct correlation. There's a correlation. People will stick around if they get paid well or whatever. But especially in this business. And so John somehow convinced me that we should start a different kind of call center. One that really thought about people. And we actually came out of People Helping People, which is our company's tagline, actually came out of John and I have a shared faith. We go to the same church. And our church pastor talks about the term needed and known. And he believed that was, in building a community of people, a tight community of people, everyone needed to feel two things. They needed to feel needed, and they needed to feel known. And his definition of needed and known was needed is, and then the way that we apply it in the BPO industry, is needed means that if you're not in your seat, if you're not in the room, you're highly missed. Your team depends on you. Your client depends on you. You're missed as a friend. You're just missed. You're needed in that space. And then on the known side, it's the concept that someone, not someone on your level, but someone above your level, a manager, a leader, a team lead, knows what your aspirations are. They know what you want to be. They know what you want to do. And it might not be working at a call center, but that they know what you want out of life. They know what your family's about, that you are known, that you're truly known. And that creates community. And so John and I started, we started really diving into Needed and Known as we started this business in the States. And then as we started to kind of figure that out, we also started to realize that a big part of the needed and known piece, especially on the known side, was that young people today, one of their biggest desires is to have impact and to do good. And they want to help people. But what they were missing, and what gets missed so much in the call center industry, is that's actually our job, is that we help people. Like, literally, we answer the phone and we help people. Or we answer emails and we help people. And it that all turns into tickets, right? That turns into tickets and number of calls and CSAT and all these terms that aren't literally helping people. And so once we started looking at people helping people.
Keep going. I'm just going to see if I can. It's called CS in the wild, so there's always a lot.
There's something wild going on next door. So we're gonna pause for a second. Dennis is right now. He's outside. He's fighting a jaguar.
Wow.
He beat the jaguar. CX in the wild.
So oh yeah.
I was just telling the audience. Oh. You were literally just fighting a jaguar outside the
Thank
door.
Thank you for narrating that
yes,
for me.
Yeah,
but
we're
back.
It was intense. It was a mess. But you didn't hurt the jaguar, which was really amazing.
No.
You talked him down.
Yeah. No. Because
no,
I had
no
I low purring. And
yes.
It's
no
fine.
Animals were hurt in this segment of the show.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's the best improv ever.
So the jaguar is okay. Okay, back to the story. So what we started to realize was that it's important for people to, especially young people in today's world, to feel like they're having impact,
making a difference.
That's right. And so the purpose of a call center is to help people. So as our job, we are people helping people. But then we started to realize that it's also us as a company helping our employees. Developing our employees, growing our employees, probably celebrating when our employees leave. Some of my best moments have been, one of our very first employees, she was a freaking rock star. I mean, John and I loved her. And she walked in and quit one day. And both of us were so upset until she told us she was moving to Silicon Valley to become a project manager at Google. And she
Fair.
And then we were like, that is so freaking awesome. Like, we were so excited. And a big part of it was the account that she was working on was a technology account. So she'd learned a lot about technology. So, like, we were fired up. But anyway, understanding these people. And so we're helping them. And then we really doubled down. We started looking at, so we started this business in the States, and then we moved it to Belize. We transitioned a lot of the business to Belize. As we started to look at how can that third part of people helping people, which is the company and the people of the company, helping the community in which we live and the communities in which we operate. And I have a long history here in Belize. My mother moved to Belize 25 years ago in a kind of a low point in her life, just kind of on a personal mission. Found herself living in the jungles of Belize outside of a southern region in the middle of nowhere, living in a convent with some sisters. And she was doing kind of a no-speaking retreat for like a year, which is incredible if you met my mother, because she talked to me about it. And anyway, she ended up founding a clinic in the jungles of Belize, near the Guatemalan border, that's now one of the largest clinics in the country of Belize, largest U.S. Doctor rotation clinic in the world. They service about 10,000 people, and she was the executive director there. She never knew anything about running a clinic or anything. It was a bit of a faith journey for her. But I started, my wife and I started serving down there 25 years ago. So we got to know Belize. And as John and I started seeing where the U.S. industry was going, because the U.S. BPO industry is changing dramatically and crazy fast, we decided that we needed to look somewhere near shore. And I said, let me take you to Belize and show you, you know, Belize is English first country, like Ghana. I said, let me take you to Belize. I didn't know anything about the BPO industry here either. I hadn't thought about that here. This was kind of just a home away from home for our family. And we came down and it was only 30 months ago. It was about 30 months ago. We came down and we were here for a week. A good friend of mine took us around and introduced us to a bunch of people. And by the end of the week, we had a term sheet to acquire a small BPO, and which was the easiest way to get into the country, have a bank account, be able to start bringing on some agents. And we had some clients who were interested in nearshore. And then when we got here, we realized that we had the opportunity to set a new tone in an industry in an entire country. And the BPO industry is still somewhat young here. I mean, it's 15 years old. It's not as old as some industries, as some countries. But it hasn't been shaken up much. Most of the players that are here have been here for a while. And so we came in and we were very aggressive with what we were trying to do for people. And that led to the industry kind of needing to catch up. Even though we were much smaller than, I mean, we're still smaller than some of our competitors here. But we were able to watch the entry level wage here in Belize increase by about 30% over 20 months. Which was fine for us. There was room for it. There were some companies that were making a lot of money, more money than John and I feel like we need to make. I'm not going to judge them. They can make as much money. People can make as much money as they want. But for us, we didn't feel like we needed that much margin. And so we've already started to see some changes in the pay in the country. But then we started digging deeper, and now there's moments where we look at each other and we're like, okay, we're getting too deep. But we've done fun things. You got to join us this morning when we were involved in giving laptops with amazing technology to kids who are blind with disabilities. So we've got a partnership with the disabilities desk here in the country. We bought the country only has one handicap bus in the entire country. And we bought the second one and donated it to the country. So it's used for evacuation here in Belize City. And now we're starting to get involved in a whole bunch of other things here. So we're really starting to see, it's funny because in my career, I did business, startups. And then I took about 6 years off and focused on starting a nonprofit called Freedom United, Fights Modern Slavery Around the World. And that's how I thought, okay, I've run good businesses, I've helped the people that I've worked for, I've provided a good service, and I've made some money. And so I kind of checked that box. But I never really thought about the business being able to have monumental impact. And so I went and tried to do it with a nonprofit, and because that's what you do, like halftime. And, that's what you do in your halftime. You stop and you try to do good for the world. And I did that, and I realized that the nonprofit industry is just as crazy as any other industry, and did have a bunch of impact. But then what we found now is we can literally use a call center to potentially inspire monumental change of an entire country, which is like freaking cool. I mean, fun, really hard, but a lot of fun. So we've been...
Okay, but I just wonder, what isn't hard? I mean, everything is hard in life. I mean... But having the ratio and proportion of impact to an entire country.
Yep.
Okay, we can recognize that as an opportunity.
And some people are lucky enough to be at the right place at the right time like you are and have the right heart and the right disposition to move into that opportunity. But it's been several years. And honestly, as I listen to your story, you had a little bit of roots here. So you had some roots. And when I say roots, I don't mean just experiences here. Your family had already been creating positive change for a couple of decades.
Yeah. My heroes. My heroes. Yeah.
Yeah. And so you had
some... I have very few, but my mom's one of them.
Your mom had done well here in terms of helping people, helping people. You and John sort of, it just sort of was a natural, probably a natural selection of events as you explored together. You're like, hey, let's go look at Belize. But then you recognize you can make a impact on a countrywide level. And all of those things can exist, but the reason I'm reiterating that is anybody can tell that story. Anybody can say, all the listeners can point out, that sounds like a great story. You can do it, but you're actually doing it. You're several years, 30 months in. And I underscore that because talk is cheap and content is easy to produce, but doing the work to helping people, it's an actual thing. And so I've been here at your place for this week. I've spoken to your agents. You've given me transparent access. I have a key card around my neck. I can walk around. I can ask anybody whatever I want. I talked to your agents. You know, each of them had a different story. A more diverse story than I had heard in other countries where there's sort of a similar level of poverty. Here, everybody has a bunch of different stories.
It's the melting pot of Central America. It's very much, it's America. It's the U.S., but in a third world country in the middle of Central America. Everybody's from everywhere.
Everybody had a different story, but every single one of the people that I spoke to, your agents, and I'm talking about the frontliners, not the most well-paid, the people who are just figuring it out. Every one of them said, I'm seen, I'm needed, I'm known here. I am not a number. In fact, at least half of them used the exact phrase of, I worked at other call centers, but here I'm not just another number. And I don't know if that meant like number as in a metric or a performance, but they felt like they belonged here. And that's not something you can buy. You can't. It's like, you know, growing a plant. You can't scream at a plant or water a plant or inspire a plant to grow. It just grows. So you've grown this culture here. So I say that because I've recognized firsthand that this isn't just some talk track you're throwing out on a podcast. You're really doing it. But I like to get underneath that. Share with me some of the initial wins or successes you had on a human level in Belize that caused you to believe and double down your emotional and financial investments here.
The first one is really, the first one that comes to mind is really easy because the other thing is kind of wacky about this is that, I mean, we're starting a country where we don't, or we're starting a company where we don't live. So I've never done that. Like I'm trying to start a business that's literally thousands of miles from my home, which is a little unusual because I'm used to being incredibly hands on. I mean, that's what I like. I like being very in control and very hands on. So you know, we come and visit a lot, and we have to build a great team here, and our team is second to none. They're fantastic. But John's also one of my best buddies, which is a good thing. And we happened to be here, this was kind of somewhat early on. We happened to be here when the most recent hurricane hit Belize.
Lisa.
Yes. And when Lisa hit, it was one of the first times in 75 years that Belize City was where it landed. Belize City never actually... Hurricanes seldom hit the city because it kind of is on a peninsula and it's real shallow. And John and I sat through the hurricane in our apartment that has windows all in it and watched a hurricane beat at our windows with lots of towels. We basically soaked everything in the apartment trying to lap up the water. And so we were freaked out, but the next day we woke up and we got in the car, and for the first time ever in my business career, I got to do service work, like real service work, like roofs were gone of our employees. And so we started touring our employees' homes. Everything was ruined. All their clothes. The amount of rainfall, it was just remarkable. The whole power grid was down for the country. And we had one important thing was we had to keep the business going because our clients, everybody listening to this knows our industry, like you cannot be down. That's what you don't do. So we had to get back up and running as fast as we could. But at the same time, we literally had people in life and death situations that John and I could help, and we could actually impact them right then and there. And so we went through, there was about 4 weeks of aftermath after the hurricane where we were able to jump in and physically help people get their lives back together. And I've never gotten to do that in a business scenario. Or related to a business.
Everybody fantasizes about that they would do it, or they have done it, but very few have.
I've helped people here and there. You give somebody an extension of their pay, you give somebody some pay or whatever, something like that. But I mean, this was literally we had hundreds of people who literally their homes, their roofs had been blown off, and their walls had fallen down, and their bathrooms were gone, and things were destroyed, and so what was incredible about that, so financially, I'm trying to figure out a way to say this, Dennis. So financially, the other thing that helped us realize was when you come from our world, when you come from the United States, and you come into a world like this, the value of a dollar bill is incredibly different than the value of a dollar bill back home. And it was one of the first times that I was able to see what $5,000 could do. And I'm just picking a number.
Yeah.
But we're talking about a roof being replaced for $250. Like somebody having a roof over their head for $250. It almost became a done, like, to the point where someone had to stop me because I was like, and not saying that I was being overly generous. I was like a kid in a candy store.
I understand.
I'm like, we can affect all these lives for like not a lot of money. And I would say that solidified for Jonathan and I at that moment in time when we were watching people's lives literally be changed by our presence, just the company's presence and our physical presence here, we realized that we can be helpful without pushing an agenda, without pushing any core values that are different here, whatever, without changing their culture, without anything, just loving on people. Delivering water to people. I got to walk to people's houses, and just deliver big, heavy, freaking waters of bottle or bottles of water to people.
So I want to jump in there because one of the things, the reason I wanted a podcast with you rather than get you all in the video project is because I think the podcast gives us more leeway to talk more freely in a wider range of subjects. And one of the things I'm fascinated on, I've had a couple of guests on the show that refer to God and scripture and those sorts of things. One of the guests on the show was Alice Marie Johnson. Mm-hmm. You may remember Alice Marie Johnson. Donald Trump pardoned her, because Kim Kardashian went into the White House and said, can you pardon this woman? So I met, it's a little bit loud, but we're in the wild. You can, let's leave the hurricane sounds in the background on. So, but she's faith-based. She had a life sentence, didn't really deserve to have a life sentence. She never gave up her faith. She just said, when God wants me out of here, I'll get out of here. And she got out. And she was a big leader in her church, in the prisons. And people were always like, how is unwavering is your faith? And she said, just watch. And sure enough, it happened. So she, I say that because she's the only other person. And I know that you and John have a faith. You share a faith. You're believers. But you said something there which is I find interesting, which is I don't see that agenda being pushed in your your business. I see that the values of faith and caring for others and being supportive, and I think even giving the sacrifices that you've made, all of these things. And I don't share this much, but I grew up Southern Baptist. Mm-hmm. I went to church like 5 times a day, and it was, I got all my church in early.
Yes.
But I do see that what I'm fascinated by is when I talk to your people, they seem to have these scriptural or Christian values, but it's not a religious thing inside your organization. Mm-hmm. Somehow it's just your actions have manifested in, I think all of you share the same values, but I bet you if I went around and interviewed everybody would have a different name for each of the Absolutely. Different things. So
yeah, I would hope so.
How did that happen?
Yeah.
How do you make it like that without pushing your religious agenda?
okay, so it's interesting because John, I'm going to stop talking for John. Now that we're down a bit of a faith route, but I think he would be comfortable to say that we really do share a lot of the same beliefs, and I could get on a soapbox right now.
This is why we're on a podcast.
Well, yeah. So I am personally a devout follower of a Jewish rabbi from 2,000 years ago. I follow his teachings. I follow the life that he led. And I believe this. I believe that for me, I believe in a crazy story about him dying, rising from the dead, and that he supports me right now to this day. And his name is Jesus. Now that, I'm a red letter guy. I follow the red letters in the Bible, which are
yep,
Jesus' teachings.
Yep, I am.
Right. So the words
in the King James Bible.
That's right. The words that this man taught as a teacher during a 3-year ministry, I believe, are the cornerstone of living a really great life. Of living an incredibly valuable, great life, being not an easy life, but a life that fits in my value set. And my value set is that
so there's a blueprint there that you're following.
That's right. But it's very different than even if you throw religion onto it, or you even throw the word Christianity onto it, then it turns into a whole other thing that I don't even know what those words mean anymore, because they become politicized and all kinds of other stuff, and there's a lot of judgment in it. And the funny thing is that Jesus, one of his core messages was don't judge. And he really taught that our job is to serve and love people. And that's our primary mission while we're here on earth, is to serve and love people. And John and I agree with that. We agree with that fact. And so I'm going to step on evangelicals' toes here a little bit, because the evangelical church, which is the booming, the only booming part of Christianity that's happening anymore, because Christianity is shrinking, believes that saving people getting out there and introducing them to the story mm-hmm. and convincing them to believe what they believe is the right thing, that, that that's what they're called to do. And I have a little bit of a different thought than that. I actually think that's not actually my job. My job is to do what Jesus taught us, which is love people, care for people, and don't put, we don't have to put names on it. We don't have to proselytize.
So much of what you're describing in terms of Jesus, you're talking about, you know, this blueprint from the scriptures about this man who is portrayed as exemplifying certain behaviors or characteristics mm-hmm. that you see somehow are aligned with you, maybe in the past, present, and future, but you're aligned to this this idea. And what's interesting about that is you're trying to be an example of a value system. And I think a lot of people strive to do that. But in doing so, you've come here, and I see a lot of these same values. To your point, you're not trying to save people or get them to convert, mm-hmm. or you're just trying to. In some ways, you're tapping into a universal truth of goodness.
Yes, and you the moment you start using the word universalist, you become. At least in the Christian faith, you become somewhat demonized because there's all kinds of underlying theology around that. But yes, I mean, I think so my, I have a tattoo. I have one tattoo, and it's Matthew 25:21, which is a story that Jesus told. And this is my,
what is the story?
So this is my life verse. This is basically,
I got you.
And John's also a Matthew 25:21 guy. So it's actually a crazy story. He tells so many great stories, but this one was about using. So it's the story of a master who calls in three of his best finance guys. He calls them servants, but they're finance guys. Brings them in. The master was worth about $10 million.
Okay.
Very
that's
wealthy.
That's a lot back in the day.
Yeah, very, very wealthy man. Back then they called them talents. So money was measured by denali, but otherwise known as a talent. And a talent was worth a little over $1 million. And he called these three guys in. He gave the first guy 5 talents, gave the second guy 2 talents, gave the last guy 1 talent, and said, "Hey guys, I'm going on a really long trip. I want you to go and use your talents. I want you to invest them. And I want you to go make money for me. I want you to go do good with these talents." And he leaves and specifically says he goes on a very long journey. Meaning, in Jesus' point, I'm assuming, I don't know actual biblical truth. The Bible's to be interpreted. But he wasn't looking over their shoulder. They were given assets, and there was an expectation on them to do something with those assets. And when he got back, he called the three guys in. He said, "All right, fellas, I'm back. How'd you do?" First guy comes in. He says, "I doubled it. You gave me 5, I got 10. And Matthew 25:21 is the actual line that says, "Well done, good and faithful servant. I have trusted you with some things. I will trust you with many more things. Come into your master's happiness." Which is, if it's how it works, I have no idea how it works after you die. Not going to try to say I do. I've read lots about it. I don't know. I'm not going to tell somebody I know. But I'd love to hear that. That would be a cool thing to hear.
But it's purposeful.
It
has good intent.
The thing is that the last guy, the one talent guy, everybody thinks, geez, you know, he only got 1 talent. So he must not have had as much faith in the guy. But I think we all get, the point is they all got talents. They were all supposed to use them. The last guy comes in and says, "I was scared to use the talent. I didn't know what to do with it. I was worried that you might get mad at me if I did something bad. So I buried it in the dirt, but I didn't lose any of it. I've got the $1 million, and here it is." Whew. And I'm sure the guy was like, "Thank goodness that I made this decision." And in the story that Jesus tells in the Bible, the master says to him, "You wicked, lazy servant, throw him out into the darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth for all of eternity." Which is pretty intense.
That's a little harsh.
that's intense. Now, in modern Christianity, we love this saying about it's not what we do, it's what he did, right? But Jesus died on the cross, and then Christians are all saved, and you accept them into your heart, or whatever these things are that men made up that we were supposed to believe. But in my opinion, what that says, at least in my worldview, yeah. And because I need a rule book, Dennis. Like
I got you.
I'm a guy who needs a rule book.
I'm with you.
Like I'm, and whether or not people agree with it or not is okay with me, but I need one.
Yeah.
And in my world, what that says is that we're all given stuff to work with. And it's our job to do something with it. Whether or not we come back with 100% return, or we come back with a 10% return, or a 3% return, we're expected to do something with it. I actually think if the guy would have come back and said, "I invested it all
and lost it. He'd be fine.
He would have been just fine. I think the master would have been like, "I love you.
I got you.
I love you. It's okay. Come join your master's happiness and go hang out with the five-talent guy because he actually knows what to do with
it." He's not some Mr. Dumb.
Exactly. He's not going to lose it. And so to me, I think that it's more about getting up every day and making a decision that I'm going to deploy the gifts, talents, time, talent, treasure, however you want to say it, that I have to try to make impact on the world. The outcomes are not in my control a lot of times. We can be smart and try, do our best. But I actually, my ethos of the world is that it's more about the effort. And that also comes from, I won't keep going on this too long, but it also comes with my understanding. So the only way that I can understand God is as a dad, because I'm a dad, I got three daughters. And the concept of a God being my father, like my daddy, I get that. I can kind of wrap my head around it.
Sure.
And I had a good daddy. A lot of people didn't, so a lot of people couldn't use this as their example. But for me, I can.
Yeah.
My dad has his flaws, but he loved me. But when I think about my girls, and I look at my girls, and I think about my expectations of them, and what I want out of them, and what I want for them, they're all things that, for example, the five talent story, I'd be disappointed too. Like if Liza, Olivia, or Addison would have said, "I buried the money because I'm scared of you," I would have said, "You don't even know me. Like when did we not bond? Because I love you. You know that I wouldn't have gotten mad." And the other thing is the reason why I love the whole father concept is that for me, watching my kids try is all I want to watch. I don't care if they win. I don't care. I don't care if they get A's, B's, C's, D's. It really doesn't matter. And they all know that. But watching them put effort forth is what brings me joy.
I'm going to jump in on there. So a lot of people shy away from the religious conversations because they're just too much rhetoric.
I don't know how you got me in this.
That's okay. I understand what you're saying. And I think you've been eloquent in the way that you've left it open for interpretation by me or the audience, but also given us some tangible perspectives. And I'll tell you, I just want to jump in with you because mm-hmm. last night I sat on FaceTime with my daughter, mm-hmm. Lucy. She's our youngest. She's 17.
Okay.
She's in her finals. Mm-hmm. My children get straight A's. We're Asian, so like we have an irrational thing. Like
you have to get straight A's.
Yeah, don't bring home a B, and if you do, don't come home.
Yeah, exactly.
We're like a straight A's period. But she has a straight A average, but she has one class, pre-cal, and she got an 87. And she has one more test, her final, and she was coming to me and she's like, I didn't get the A. I have one single test to pull it up to an A. Like, where are we at, Dad? And I was like, well, first of all, that's why they call it a final.
Because that's right.
It's the final answer. And she was like, but are we good? Am I in trouble? And I was saying to her, I said, like the father thing, I was, and she's old enough now we can unpack it. And I was explaining to her that it's not the grade will be what the grade is. But if you stand up and you go for it and you put your best in and you fight it to your best ability, that's the miracle of it all. Seeing you stand up and go for it, that's me as a father. All I'm trying to do is give you the confidence to fight the battles of which you're afraid you can't win. Mm-hmm. If you're okay there, then that's the fatherly part I think you're talking about, is I want you to go forth and do what you can to manifest everything you can. But at the same time, and I don't know if you watch Star Trek, but they have this thing called the Kobayashi Maru. Are you familiar with it?
No, I'm afraid not.
All right.
You left me.
All right.
But I can be in.
All right. So you understand what I'm saying,
yes,
about the father thing.
Yes.
But on the other side, in Star Trek, one of the final tests at Starfleet Academy is this test called the Kobayashi Maru. And in a nutshell, the students go into it and they have to save all the other Starfleet people on a vessel that's out in space, mm-hmm, and no one can win this test. You go in and you try to be your best space person, but at the end of the day, everybody on the ship dies. And the lesson is, it's supposed to teach you that in the wild wilderness of space, there are some things that are unwinnable.
The outcome is not controllable. Your actions are controllable.
And it's just to create this awareness, mm-hmm, of that. And I was telling Lucy, I was like, if it's your Kobayashi Maru, if it's the test that is meant for you to fail, then embrace that. But at least you know why you failed. It's because it was unwinnable. You don't have to win them all. You have to have a sensibility that, and at the end of the day, this is what you are saying and what I'm saying, which is, as a father, or as a CEO, or as a chairman, or as the partner of a BPO, or any of these things, if all we do is use our influence or our relationship with other people to allow them to do their best to be known and needed, I don't think it has to be caught up in a bunch of religious doctrine or Star Trek metaphors.
That's right, because I mean, the thing is that I wish. So what would be so cool is if we could save this and then interview your daughter in 10 years or 15 years and ask her about the conversation that you had last night. Because I would bet that either that conversation or a combination of conversations of you supporting her in that way will have shaped her into a human being that's beautiful.
That's beautiful. Unstoppable.
Unstoppable. Just a badass human being. And I believe, I think if more people would think of faith in that way, if they would think of their faith in that way, instead of, it's my job to go tell people what's right and wrong, which by the way, was not Jesus' message. Jesus didn't preach that message. He actually hung out with all the bad people. He hung out with everybody who was quote unquote bad. But if we would do that, then the people around us are all lifted up. They all can see more in themselves, and then we don't have to overly worry about the outcomes. And if the outcomes are bad, we also don't have to get too down about it.
Is it easier for you to live this life as a father or an influencer of positivity? Is it just easier to do in a third world market than it is in the U.S.?
Oh, absolutely. Mm. Yeah. Again, it's. first of all, everything, I was about to say things are more controllable. They're not more controllable. They're just on a smaller scale. I mean, in the United States, I mean, the idea that I'm going to have an impact on the government in the U.S. is not large. I'm not going to go influence policy in the United States of America or be able to change the minimum wage because I advocate for it.
Yeah.
That's probably not going to happen. In a smaller country, you can have those kind of impacts. But the other thing is it goes back to the value of time, talent, and money. You know, as you gain more influence or more money, you're able to have more of an impact. And that's just fact. And again, taking it back to faith, I mean, that's why, at least for me, in my religion, the biggest thing that Jesus talked about was money. I mean, he talked about God. He talked about his father a little bit more, but he talked about money more than anything else. And that's because of the influence that currency can have. And in a third world country, you can have crazy influence
with currency. I don't think it is about the money or that for you. I'm going to cut through to, I think what's happening is certain people have a divining rod or they have a sense of where, because the fact of the matter is on every square, there's a move.
Mm-hmm.
But you moved to the square where you could have the most, your faith and your disposition towards good has the most resonance. It has the most ability to flourish. And I applaud that. I think that, and I'm just surmising these things of my own witnessing what's happening here at Cusp HD, because as I said, I'm just trying to put it in perspective. I travel all over the world. I talk to people in all these different countries. I've been on the front lines and in other really rough parts of the world. I've watched what people are doing, and I'm fascinated because I'm also drawn. I'm trying to find my place in the world where I can make the impact that is resonant. I have the most influence. And so I respect it. You know, we've talked a lot about religion. We've talked about business, money, God.
I'm trying to find what we haven't talked about. Should we cover sex? I feel like we probably should. Politics,
sex. We could talk about geopolitical, losing weight. I mean, the reason I bring that up is I read that the three things you can't talk about in mixed company are politics, religion, and health.
Like, okay, well, you look fit.
Thank you.
There we go. Okay, we covered that.
Thank you. All right. So, all this being said,
yes,
let's just play it out. You're here.
Yep.
Your mother was here. She made a big impact. Your father was a great guy. You've come to Belize. That's like a big family legacy of energy here in Belize. You're making a positive impact. Your employees, I've interviewed them. They feel strong about the culture. They are needed and known. And your daughters, your future. What happens now? Do you become the mayor of Belize, or like you want to get into politics?
You can't. I already figured that part out. Unless I would become a citizen. I think for me, what's really exciting is because I got to do. I'm doing this with one of my best friends, who is in lockstep with me. Mm-hmm. Everything that I'm saying to you is. He's got younger kids. My kids are older. My kids are more your kids' age, but he's been with me for 25 years. And what I'm excited about is that what he and I are creating here is something that he wants to do for a long time. I don't know how many rodeos I have in me or I want to be in. Yeah. Again, I actually hadn't thought I was going to be in another one until John sucked me into this one. So for me, what's most exciting is I'm going to continue to play a role in something, a spark that I think has started a bit of a fire, as one of my best friends gets to lead it and wants to lead it to become something incredibly significant. And that's been as much fun as any of it, is getting to watch my boy just blossom and bloom and become just a really amazing business guy. I mean, I started working with him when he was 22 years old.
I've never seen a more low-key guy have so much respect around from everybody around him.
It's amazing. He's got this way about him that, and it's because he's 100% genuine. Everything that comes out of his mouth.
He passed my litmus test because he took me to the gym at 6 a.m. yesterday. So I know he's in it to win it. Well, I know we have another interview, but Joe, thank you so much. One last thing. If there's one thing you could say to the rest of the world, what would it be?
If there is any whisper whatsoever going on inside your head that you should go try something audacious, then listen to the whisper and really consider it.
All right. Thank you for being on the podcast.
Yeah, it's fun.